This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What's up, Panther fans? Welcome to the post-draft edition of the Four Man Rush podcast. Tonight we got myself, Will, we got Kev, Monty, and JD going over these Panthers draft picks, which I hope everybody's doing well. Thank you for tuning in. And let's get started. So Carolina, round one, we're picking at six. All offseason, we're talking about quarterback, left tackle, right? And get to a situation where five guys go in the top five that aren't left tackles. You got, you know, Trayvon Walker going one, Aiden Hutchinson, you go Derek Stingley, you go Sauce Gardner. And the Giants, who everybody thought was going to be a tackle landing spot, end up taking Oregon edge rusher Kayvon Thibodeau. So, Kev, sitting at six with all three top tackles on the board, what's going through your mind at that point?
Oh, man, I'm thinking we about to cash the check, bro, because, you know, I've been on Team Malik Willis since the whole, you know, offseason started, but never would I had imagined ever that no tackles would have been selected, you know, with Jacksonville, you know, getting the franchise tag. And then I think they went ahead and extended Cam Robinson. Yep. You know, that gave some hope. And then, you know, we was looking ahead. Well, we're hearing rumors about the Jets and the Giants looking to upgrade their offensive line. So, you know, a little optimistic, but still not feeling it. But, you know, once I saw the that they took a defensive end, I was like, oh, shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I'm out there in the crowd, you know, because y'all know I was out there in Vegas. So, I'm around here, and I'm just sitting here like, now, I ain't going to cap. I was hollering for Evan Neal. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to front like I was, you know, being I think we was going to get Ekwonu. But, hey, listen, if we'd walked away with any one of them three, that was going to be a huge, huge franchise-changing win for us. So, the fact that, you know, we were able to get what we later found out as the number one overall tackle on our board and many others' board, game changer. You know, this franchise has been starting for a franchise left tackle since 2013 when Jordan Gross retired after the season. So, man, I'm just excited, man. You know, we got someone that's physical, that's nasty, that's got a high football IQ, strong work ethic. I even had a few friends hit me up like, yo, you know, his dad is my doctor. Like, what you mean? So apparently Ekwonu's dad is some sort of doctor in the Charlotte area. And they was like, yeah. That's his dad is my doctor. And I was like, wow. Okay. So cool. But yeah, I'm just really excited, man, that we finally put a stop to the turnstile at left tackle. And I would like to think for the next 10, 12, 15 years, this is going to be the man that's going to be protecting our quarterback's blind side, whoever that may be.
Right, that's a good point. I mean, Akeem Ekwonu, you think about him, he's born and raised in Charlotte, went to Providence Day High School. He was on the wrestling team. He was the anchor on the 4x100 track relay team, which is crazy. Imagine you're lining up on the track on the anchor leg. You got a 285-pound offensive tackle running up against you. I mean, if you lose that race, I think I'll end up quitting track at that point. But, Monty, I know you were all in on quarterback. What are you thinking when the top five picks are gone and, man, it's all Cross, Neal, and Ekwonu are all still on the board for us?
Yeah, I definitely was all in for quarterback. I think the closer we got to the draft, I kind of came back to the realization that, you know, offensive tackle probably would be the better pick at that time. I'll be honest, at that time, you know, with all three tackles on the board, all the quarterbacks on the board that we were looking at, you know, because nobody thought there was going to be five defensive players, the defensive run, those first five picks, you know, at least everybody thought there was going to be at least one tackle going. So at that point, I'll be honest, I'm thinking, if we're talking about value and retaining picks, you know, get back to nine, get back to 10, you know, if there was somebody available wanting looking to trade with us, get some picks back and you still have, likely a tackle fall in your lap. Thank God I don't make these calls, you know, because like I said, that would have been likely the wrong call. And again, we came away with, like you said, you know, the best tackle on our board and a lot of other boards. You can't be upset with that, you know, even with me being so, you know, even with me doubling down on needing a quarterback and wanting a quarterback. KF hit it on the head. You know, like I said, we've had a turnstile at offensive tackles for, gosh, since Jordan Gross. It's almost a decade now, if not longer than a decade, you know, so it's it's you know, the time has come for needing an offensive tackle. I don't think you could have went wrong in any direction, you know, quarterback or you know, or I mean, if you traded back for a quarterback or, you know, if you went offensive tackle what we did at six, I don't think that either decision would have been bad. The better decision would have been offensive tackle, you know, so I think we did, you know, I'm pleased, man. I think, like you said, you got a potential franchise offensive tackle for the next 10 to 15 years there. And, you know, going on to the next round or the next day and getting a quarterback, you know, we're going to talk about that here shortly. You know, I'm happy. You know, I feel like we definitely knocked it out of the park. Got a blue chip offensive tackle there. You know, we no longer have to worry about protecting our blind side. Now, you know, you have five solid guys up front, and you know, there's to me.
Okay. JD, I know you were also on the kind of the quarterback, or you kind of were back and forth, but I mean, nobody expected this. All three tackles on the board at six. When you see the draft board fall the way they did, what was on your mind at that point?
In my head, I'm thinking a trade back, not necessarily to target a quarterback, but to kind of recoup some day two picks that we didn't have already. And then potentially also getting your tackle, because if you trade back to like a 9 or 10, those two teams get to jump up and take their guy. But also you get a chance to get one of the top three tackles as well if they continue to fall. So I definitely, in my mind, I thought Giants were definitely going to tackle because they wanted to get their pick out of the top three and then let us get the scraps. But as they go Kayvon Thibodeau, it left us with the top tackle on our board. And you can't be mad at getting the top player on your board. And I can imagine if they didn't have a generational grade on Icky, it was pretty close to a generational grade. So definitely no complaints on my end. I would have preferred Neil, like many of the guys in the four-man rush or a couple of guys in our group here. But Icky is a guy that's nasty, plays with Black Air Force energy for sure. So, look, well-deserved. And I think we did it where we needed to shore up our O-line a little bit more.
Okay, we're sitting on the board with three tackles, Akeem Ekwonu, Evan Neal, and Charles Cross. I know you're the trench guy in this group. Can you tell me why you feel like Icky would be the best fit with the Panthers as opposed to the other two? Not knocking them, but what made them go Icky over those two?
Honestly, I think that it was the nasty, physical, aggressive style that he blocks with, along with the high football IQ. Not knocking Neil across to make them seem like they're soft or they're not as intelligent. But, you know, when the Panthers, you know, did their research whenever, you know, they had the pro days and when it was at the combine and, you know, you heard the whispers of what it was that they were looking at for, you know, to improve the offensive line. The traits that Ekwonu has, you know, really started to stick out because, number one, you know, when Matt Rhule fired Joe Brady, he said he wanted to become a more, you know, power run type of team. Well, to do that, you need to have offensive linemen that are able to have that availability. And the offensive line that we had last year, most of them were more comfortable being zone blocking, you know, being more on the athletic side and using angles versus, you know, man power blocking, which is physically removing your man out of the way and moving up to the next level. So with Ekwonu, you got someone that, I mean, when you put on his tape, you know, all you see is him driving guys down the field or putting guys on their backside. I remember out in Vegas watching, you know, the detail inside about him. They were saying that just last year alone, he had for every pancake block that you got as an offensive lineman at North Carolina State, you got a bottle of syrup, and he ended up having 50 bottles of syrup, you know, just last year. And that's, you know, pancake blocks. And I think he had like another 30, what they call knockdown blocks or whatever. So, you know, difference being pancake is when you put the man down and you lay down on top of him versus knockdown, where you just knock him down and you keep it going. So either way, he's definitely removing that player out of the way. So I'm just thinking that they went with him because, you know, that his, you know, with his athletic ability, because he still needs to refine some things, particularly in his pass set. But the fact that he's athletic and got great footwork and just overall ability to really, even when he makes a mistake, to recover quickly, I just think that that's what made him the best option for it. And hopefully his nasty demeanor blocking is going to rub off on everybody else. We can discuss a little bit later on, you know, about the what the potential offensive line looked like, because I got a couple of surprises when it comes to that. But that would be the reasons why I think that we went with Ekwonu.
And you mentioned that zone versus power. According to PFF, you know, they have good stats on this type of stuff. When Ben McAdoo was with the Giants, he leaned on gap runs as opposed to zone runs on 49.9% of their run plays, which was above league average. So I think that's definitely, we're going to see something different from our offense, which is more of a downhill power run game as opposed to the zone blocking inside zone plays that Joe Brady was running. So with that in mind, you get a guy like Ekwonu here. I think they graded him as one of the best run blockers that they've ever done since they started tracking the scores. So I think, you know, Ekwonu's size, his nastiness, I think he'll make a good pairing with the guys we got on our offensive line. Now, I saw one question asking about what that means for Brady Christensen and whether he'll be the left tackle. What's up, Jay? Hope you're doing well tonight. Good to see you, man. I think what you'll see here, when the Panthers drafted Brady Christensen a year ago, they had him graded as a second-round guard and a third-round tackle. So they really projected him as a guard. Had to do some with the what we laugh at with the arm length. But I don't think that's the only reason why. I think initially when I looked at him last year as well, I thought he was more of a guard as well. I think he has the athleticism to play the position, the feet to get make those second-level blocks. I think a tackle, you know, arm length does kind of matter as well. You know, let's be honest about that. I mean, Matt Rule's not the only one who thinks that way. So I think with Icky on the left side and possibly Bozeman on the other side of him, I think you can get the best out of Brady Christensen if he moves to left guard. So if I were to guess at what the starting lineup would be today, I think you'd have Icky at left tackle, Brady Christensen and Michael Jordan battling it out for that left guard spot. I think you'll have Bradley Bozeman and Pat Elflein battling it out for that center spot. Austin Corbett, I think, will solidify the right guard spot, and have Taylor Moten at right tackle. And you want to talk about the depth. I mean, now you talk about Cam Irving. He's a guy that can back up four different positions. So maybe he makes the roster as kind of a swing tackle or a guy that can back up both guard spots. So I think he'll still be valuable since you can only carry, 46 guys on the active roster on game day. So, you need a guy that can have that kind of versatility. We'll get to the other guy, Cade Mays, in a while, but he'll compete for some reps on the interior. Dennis Daly has played multiple positions as well. So I think you're starting to see that O-line unit start to gel together nicely with five solid starters finally, which is what we got to address first of all. And then you can get into the versatility, position flexibility with the backups, since you're only allowed to have so many guys active on game day.
And let's not also forget Michael Jordan, who's our midseason pickup, who brought a lot of that nastiness as well, because the power gap running is definitely his strength as well. Because, you know, with Smooth, you know, that was one of the highlights for him last year, was the play and just the nastiness that that Michael Jordan played. So let's not rule him out in that battle for that guard spot as well. I know a lot of people thinking because we spent a draft pick on Brady Christensen, that is, you know, it's automatically his spot. But again, if you fair and objective, you know, one of the knacks on Brady is that, yeah, he has elite athleticism and a quick get off, but he brings very little power to the table. He's not really moving people. He's more so just kind of standing in the way. And, you know, under this game with, you know, Ben McAdoo, you got to get movement. So, you know, it's going to be up to him to show that he's able to be more physical at the point of attack. You know, don't be wasting steps. You know, it's good to have that get off, but if you're not bringing no hips, no power with it, you know, you're going to get stood up. You're going to clog up the lane. But I definitely think that it's going to be that left guard spot probably is going to be the best battle at camp, period, because of the style we're trying to run versus the competition that we got there.
And so that wraps up the first pick with Icky Ekwonu. I think we're all happy that we finally got the first, you know, we won't call him a Hall of Fame just yet, but it's good to get a high highly graded draft prospect at the tackle position, something we haven't had in a long time. So hopefully he adapts fast and he can be a plug-and-play guy. We desperately need help on that offensive line. So let's move through draft deck. So we're done with day one. We're not going to trade back into the first round. Second round hits. All five of the quarterbacks that we had 30 visits with the exception of Kenny Pickett, are off the board heading into day two. Now, Monty, what is your thought? Because I know a lot of us were high on the Malik Willises and all these other guys, but you're seeing five quarterbacks available on day two. What's going through your mind at this stage?
Yeah, I, you know, me like everybody else, I'm thinking, you know, let's go get your quarterback. You know, going into it, Scott Fitterer was clear that he wanted to address quarterback. You know, that was a need. Just, you know, I believe everybody believes that quarterback and offensive tackle are your two biggest needs going into this offseason. So, yeah, I mean, going with, you know, four or five quarterbacks that you actually barred in, like you said, or as for visits, I'm thinking you go get your guy. Now, I don't believe anybody saw all of them falling out of the second, you know, and that's actually crazy. I don't believe the last time I've seen a quarter, you know, there be no quarterbacks go in the second round, and especially with only being one going in the first. So, you know, that was crazy, and it actually, you know, fell in our favor, you know, because, and I think Scott Fitterer, you know, I looked at the interview with Matt Rhule after day two, and, you know, he hit it on the head. You know, Scott Fitterer was elite in day two. You know, stay put. Let the board fall in your favor. You know, go get the quarterback that you were highest on, and what you do is you establish that left tackle position all offseason. All we've done is rebuild that offensive line, and then you go get your quarterback. You know, Scott Fitterer's been clear about wanting to get a rookie quarterback on a rookie deal here, and I'm pleased, man. You know, Matt Rhule has a lot. Matt Rhule, I'm sorry. Matt Corral. I'm gonna get it right. I promise, Panther fans. I'm sorry, Matt Corral. For all the things that we can say that he doesn't have, you know, I feel like he, for my biggest knock on him that was going into it, was that he was a little undersized. I think, you know, he has that dog mentality that we all want in your quarterback. You know, I've been making jokes with the four-man rush in our group chat that, you know, he's 6'2", 210, and he thinks he's 6'5", 240. You know, and that can kind of hurt him, but that can also play in his favor as well. You know, that he's going to give you every bit of his, you know, every fight, every will that he has, he's going to give it on the field. And, you know, and you see it on the field. So I love it, man. I think that with the first two picks our first two picks with the first and third round picks, that we knocked it out the park. You know, now and like I said, as we go forward moving into day three, I think we just set up ourselves in the perfect position, man. So I'm pleased, bro.
JD, what do you think the media got wrong when trying to project Desmond Ridder, Malik Willis, and even Matt Corral? Because you're looking at these mock drafts, you're seeing guys going to top 10, five quarterbacks in the first round. Now all of a sudden, we're on the actual draft day. You know, only Kenny Pickett gets picked at Pittsburgh. Nobody in the second round. We don't see another quarterback get picked until Desmond Ridder. I mean, what's going on here?
Straight like this, quarterbacks get clicks, bro. Quarterbacks get all the hype. People call it the most position, most important position on the football field. Everybody in the media wants to hit on the next big quarterback. So guys like Dak Prescott go late. There's guys that are tweeting, hey, Dak Prescott is the next guy. Keep an eye out for him. Like myself. Ring, ring, ring. That was me. So it's like, people trying to make a name for themselves. I feel like a lot of beat writers will hype up a certain guy and make him out to be a top pick. And as far as like field workouts go, everybody was on the Malik Willis train from what I saw after pro day. Everybody was like, hey, Matt Corral can sling this thing a little bit. Let's review the film. So it can be a fluid thing. I think what we missed, or what I missed for some of these quarterbacks, is just the intricacies and how teams would value what they do well with their own scheme. That, and coming off one of the deepest quarterback classes we've ever seen last year, I think a lot of teams already felt that need, or a lot of teams this offseason decided, hey, I'm cool with what I got after all the debauchery and debacles that we saw this offseason of everybody trying to secure their franchise quarterback.
Now, Kev, I know a lot. The assumption was that there would be no way possible that we'll be able to address both in this draft. It had to be one or the other at six. If we took a left tackle, we'd have to probably go out to the veteran quarterback market and trade for either Baker Mayfield, maybe Jimmy Garoppolo, who's still healing from shoulder surgery, or do another veteran quarterback trade. Now, we do know, because through various media sources, that there were negotiations going on with Baker Mayfield during the draft. So can you just kind of tell us, without giving away too much, why, what went wrong with the Mayfield negotiation?
Okay, so during the second round, right around the late 39th, the 39th, 40th pick, you know, I got a message, you know, I showed you guys in the chat, you know, from, you know, my one of my two sources on the team that's, you know, that I'm well connected with, was sharing inside information that Scott Fitterer was on the phone with Cleveland discussing, you know, about Baker Mayfield. And the stumbling blocks initially was the fact that Cleveland did not want to pick up any of Baker's fifth year option, which is that same $18.8 million that we're having to pay for Sam Darnold. And I don't blame them. You know, we're already stuck with one sunken cost. You think we're going to take on another one? So that ended it. And then I guess Cleveland called right back and then said, okay, all right, we'll take on some of the costs. And I think at this time that maybe Scott is already thinking, like, you played my face, so how about this? We're going to throw in Sam Darnold as part of the package. And then Cleveland responded back with, hell no. You know what I'm saying? So it's just kind of like, I think that once they rubbed Scott the wrong way, I think he kind of humored that conversation a little bit more to, you know, for whatever reason. I don't know. I like somebody with a little bit of petty, because y'all know I'm petty myself. But, you know, just the fact that there's been no teams willing to take Sam Darnold. And again, just to share some inside information, this offseason long, Scott Fitterer has talked to 11 different general managers about trading for Sam Darnold. A couple of times has offered a player and a pick, and other teams still did not want to be dealing with Sam Darnold in any way, shape, or capacity. So you think that's a third of the league, 32 teams. He spoke with 11 teams that were looking to get, you know, add some quarterback depth or whatever. And even with the draft picks and a player included, wouldn't budge. So let's just go ahead and chalk it up that Sam Darnold is a sunken cost for us this year. And but yeah, so that's what took place, because originally I thought that we were going to trade for Cleveland for their 44th pick and get a quarterback. But later on, again, you guys saw the messages that I was getting. It was more so talking about with Baker Mayfield. So that was the exchange behind the scene draft night between the Panthers and the Browns over Baker Mayfield.
I appreciate you, Luke Cage. Hope you're doing well. Says, mad love, fellas. I'm just happy there's no retreads in the building. That Darnold and Corral fight for the Showmar. Shout out to Money.
Money.
So let's move through. So Baker Mayfield negotiations kind of falling through now, right? And yet the quarterbacks are still falling. So it's looking like the Panthers are having so much leverage, right? So now we're saying, wait a minute, we're on the phone with Baker Mayfield, possibly on the phone with Jimmy G. But wait a minute, the, you know, quarterbacks that we rate a lot higher than third round picks are falling down the board. So, you know, we're going through the draft, we're watching these guys get picked. The next quarterback that gets picked is Desmond Ridder at 74. So, Monty, I know you're a big Malik Willis guy. What are you thinking at this point once Desmond Ridder gets taken? You thinking try to make your move now or what?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, and like I said, I wasn't expecting them to fall as far as they did. But, yeah, I was all in on getting Malik Willis, you know, especially if the game is we're sitting a quarterback a year and banking on upside. You know, you go get the guy that has the highest upside. Now, that being said, the question with taking Corral versus taking Willis is, how far is the gap between Corral and Willis when you look at their upside? again, I can't be upset with either pick. You know, those were the two. Those were my two. Well, that wasn't my. Corral was quarterback three for me. But again, the gap between Willis and Corral isn't that significant enough to where it's like, okay, it's no way that I'm not, you know, I'm going to be upset with taking Matt Corral. I was all in on going to go get a quarterback. You know, I would have been upset going out of day two, not addressing the quarterback position. It's no way I think that you can go another year with Sam Darnold starting full time. And I just, as much as I would have been okay with going to go get Baker Mayfield, I know a lot of guys in the four-man rush and just a lot of fans in general weren't okay with the Baker Mayfield move. I personally wouldn't have been upset, you know, but even if Baker Mayfield wasn't the option or, you know, what have you, or even if it was an option, I feel like the argument is, you know, I'm not going to pay 18 plus million for Baker Mayfield when we know what we get with Baker Mayfield versus getting a guy that you can mold and you can make it, you know, and you can turn into whoever you like. So I'm happy. Again, I think that Scott Fitterer, you know, Matt Rhule hit it on the head. Scott Fitterer was elite this weekend. You know, he stayed put. He knew what he was doing. You know, he actually had a in-depth plan of what he wanted to come out of this draft with, and he did it. He got the depth and position that he wanted, and he also, you know, got two potential key pieces for, you know, moving forward. You know, you got a very young team now, and you got a young quarterback on a rookie deal, and you got a blue chip offensive tackle. I just, you know, I can't find much to complain about this year, you know.
Shout out Aaron Chase. Thank you for tuning in, man. Hope you're doing well today. All right, now I'm going to let JD have a vent session. So we're going, Desmond Ridder gets picked at 74. And going pick after pick after pick. We get to 86. Tennessee Titans are on the clock, and they pick none other than Malik Willis. So the guy, you know, who was JD's number one quarterback is now gone at number 86. What's going through your mind after you see Tennessee take Malik Willis?
You taking me back to that place, man. Let me see. So on my board, I actually have Kenny Pickett as my number one guy. I have him 18, Malik 19. So they were right on top of each other. And then I had Corral 39. So in my head, I am thinking at this point, I do not want to trade for a veteran quarterback, another veteran quarterback, especially a guy that we're only going to have for 1 year. And then we're right back in the same boat that we are now. And I would prefer to draft a guy just to have them around longer. But I'm not sure. Do you go for it? In my mind, I'm thinking, do you go for a Corral? I know they like Howell. If you wait, maybe Howell falls to you, because I'm pretty sure Corral is going to be the next off the board. We trade up, and then we take Matt Corral. And I'm not completely certain where I stand with Matt Corral, because obviously the arm talent is one of the key things for him. Like, it pops off on film. Everybody sees it. The dog mentality is huge. I love that. There's just some ugly film, bro, of him getting himself in trouble.
Well, the question is, RCJD, I don't mean to speak out of turn. So the question is, for me to you, is there not just as much ugly film for Malik Willis as it is Matt Corral? Because, you know, because I think everybody knows I've been the loudest about wanting Malik Willis. You know, again, I agree with you that Malik Willis is, you know, was the guy that I wanted. The question I asked earlier, do you think the gap between Matt Corral and Malik Willis is that significant enough to where you're banking more on Malik to hit than Matt Corral? Because in my opinion, I don't think it is, bro. I think that they both have a lot of ugly tape. we can go through both guys' film and be like, okay, that's just not going to work in the NFL. And you know, but you can also find a lot of throws and be like, okay, that is the NFL throw. So my question to you is, do you think that gap is that significant enough to where you're banking more on one player to hit versus the other?
That's a good question. So at the end of all my QB profiles, I do a overall grade. I think I had Kenny Pickett 5.5. I had Malik Willis 5.45. And I had Corral 5.4. So they're right on top of each other. It's just a matter of preference for me. I'm not a fan of like, well, I don't like turnovers, bro. And I was chilling on Corral. I was like, okay, I can get with this until I got to that Arkansas game, bro. Until I got to that game where he threw five picks. That did it for me, bro. I was like, wait a minute now. Hold on. Pause. And you can work with a lot of stuff that he gives you. Like, you can improve. You can improve route timing. That's a couple of interceptions right there. You can improve feel for outbreaking routes from the far hash. You can improve all that. Even though that's not even a primary function of, like, a West Coast offense, which is what we'll be running. Your question to me was, did he sell his team? Did Malik Willis sell his team like Corral did? Hell no. 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 Malik Willis is the reason why Liberty is in the game. Every game.
So Matt Corral coming back in and torching Arkansas the very next year, that doesn't move you at all?
Hey, it moved him right back up until, because I had him, he dropped all the way down after that game, bro. So it moved him back into the conversation for me.
See, and this is, I've won, I love you, brother, and I fully respect that opinion. This is my problem with that. You know, do we not credit quarterbacks for getting better over time, or, you know, over developing, you know, from 1 year to the next? Because, yeah, I fully agree with you. You know, the Arkansas game 2020 was ugly. You know, it was, there's no way to sugarcoat it. You could pull up that film and be like, okay, that's a round five quarterback. You know, that's a day three quarterback. But then you turn around in the very next year, and bro, you could tell it was personal for him at that point. You know, it's if he wasn't going to lose to anybody 2021, Arkansas was the team he wasn't going to lose to. And not only did he not lose to Arkansas, bro, he dismantles Arkansas the entire game. You know, it's, you know, he comes by, and then I think that was, if I'm not mistaken, it's either that game, he either's coming off of ankle injury, or he injures his ankle that game as well. So, you know, he's coming off of an ankle injury, and he destroys Arkansas that entire game. And then, so now I'm looking like, so that, you know, I just say that to say to me, transfer, you know, moving into the NFL, bro, I can bank that if my quarterback get his teeth kicked in 1 week, oh, next week he's not happy. And that's why I want to be with a prospect. Like, you go out there and lay an egg like you do in 2020, bro. You see that same team again, bro. There is no love lost. You know, I don't want you shaking hands. I don't want you happy. I want you to take it personal. And you can tell that's kind of where he was at with it. So I can't hang or totally tank Corral over a 2021 over the 2020 performance against Arkansas, and then totally, you know, and then not bank on the 2021 performance, if that makes sense.
That's fair.
Back to what you want to see from a prospect throughout his years. I mean, in 2020, he threw 14 interceptions at 29 touchdowns. But what you don't see is he had 11 of those 14 interceptions came in two games. So he had two bad games, Arkansas and LSU, that accounted for 11 out of 14 of his total interceptions for the season. Then he comes out in 2021, and he's only thrown five interceptions. So you're seeing a guy that's cut down his turnovers from 14 to 5 from his redshirt sophomore year to his junior year, because he came out early. He still had one more year of eligibility. So I think he did improve a lot in that department. When you look at a Matt Corral, I think it's about what are the translatable skills that he's bringing to the table from college to pro. You know, you look at the offense, Ole Miss ran heavy RPO. I think it's like 40% of his passing line of scrimmage were from RPOs. And what Ben McAdoo says about that is the thing he likes about RPO quarterbacks is the quick release, which Matt Corral has, and how he knows where to go with the football and is very decisive in that regard. And the footwork, you know, from the RPO, resetting your feet, getting in throwing position and making that quick throw. And he said those traits are something that's translatable to the NFL. So I think that's kind of what sold McAdoo on Matt Corral, was just the skill set that he feels can translate to the NFL. Now, he does need some work. You know, you see some missed throws outside the numbers when he has to drive the ball, put a little extra heat on it. It may sail on him at times. I mean, that's just going to be some footwork fixes that Sean Ryan and Ben McAdoo will have to work with him with. And then touch passes. He needs to realize not everything needs to be a laser. You know, sometimes you got to put some touch on the ball, let your guy run under it. I think that's why he was off target on a couple of deep balls here and there. But overall, I mean, Matt Corral was QB. I mean, we all had different QB rankings for that matter. I think people that listen to us and follow us on Twitter and Facebook seem to think we all have the same exact opinion on every topic, which is funny because we probably disagree on everything there is regarding football stuff. But Matt Corral was my quarterback one this year over Kenny Pickett and Malik Willis. I just think he had those skills that will translate to the next level. I think Malik Willis struggled a bit on the short to intermediate throws and over the middle of the field. I think he's more built for that Tennessee offense where it's going to be play action vertical, you know, have a run game that he can be a part of and run the play action, you know, just throw that ball deep outside the numbers where he does best. I think in Ben McAdoo's West Coast system, quick passes, slants, you know, things like that, I think Matt Corral and Kenny Pickett were better fit. So being able to trade up into, you know, where we did in the third round and, you know, get one of the top three quarterbacks. I think Corral was actually one on some guys on the Panthers board in the building, one on their board. I think that's just a win overall. Nobody going into the draft expected us to come out with a top three tackle and a top three quarterback, but Scott Fitterer was still able to manage to do it. So, Kev, what are your thoughts on Fitterer being able to address both positions in his draft?
Before I answer that, I just want to respond to some of these comments in the chat here, if y'all paying attention. It's a lot of comments about, you know, want to put Icky at left guard. Let me just, for those who don't realize, he only played four games at left guard his whole career. The rest of the game, I think it was like 27 games he played at left tackle. I mean, if you're a Brady Christensen fan, I get it. You know, you want to see the guy do good. You want to see him have a shot. I get all of that. But if we're talking pure best left tackle, there's no comparison between Brady Christensen and, you know, Akeem Ikwanu as who's the better overall left tackle. Like, even Brady Christensen's best day is not going to give you what Ikwanu is going to give you at left tackle. I mean, it's good to have that position flexibility in a pinch. I get it. Maybe certain, you know, short yardage formations, you may want to move things around. You know, maybe use some of that tackle eligible, you know, have Brady, you know, at the end man at the line of scrimmage. You know, I mean, I get all of that because he's athletic. But again, when you think about the type of offense, you know, running game we're going to have on a Ben McAdoo, you know, it's Icky at left tackle, and that should be it. You know, I just felt the need to address that because I was seeing multiple people want to say that we need to put Icky at left guard. And I'm sitting here like, what? The consensus number one left tackle be moved to left guard? I'm just struggling to understand what's the concept behind that when we've been crying for a left tackle for damn near 10 years. So I just wanted to address that real quick. But we're back to your real question. Other question, I'll make it quick here since I talked so much about that. As far as, you know, what Scott Fitterer did, that's pure magic. You know, whenever Matt Rhule gave him credit for, as you mentioned earlier, being patient, you know, we were getting a lot of calls to, you know, make a move earlier. And Scott, you know, trusted the board, trusted his, instincts. And that takes, you know, some real gumption to do that because, let's be honest, you know, even though Mr. Tepper came out and said that Rhule got a support, Rhule is on the hot seat this year. Let's not fool ourselves. Let's not take the comments too literally. You know, it's all about winning around here. You know, we can't go 5-12 again and expect Tepper to be okay with it. He said what he had to say, you know, to show support. That's what you're supposed to do to the public, but behind them doors, you know what time it is. But, yeah, Fitter did a great job. I didn't personally see it coming. I didn't think it would be possible to pull off both. And the fact that we didn't, I mean, I saw some people grumbling like, oh, we ain't going to have no third-round pick next year. If you potentially, and I do have to say potentially because I like the way Monty said it on Twitter, if you potentially maybe you have your franchise quarterback and you was able to get him in the third round and it only costs you a third-round pick, you'll take that all day long compared to, for example, the 49ers with Trey Lance, they had to give up 3 first-round picks to get theirs. You know, now, don't get me wrong. I'm not comparing Matt Corral to Trey Lance, but I'm just talking about as far as the value of what teams are willing to give up to get their franchise quarterback. Hats out to Scott Fitterer for not mortgaging away our future and to take care of two of our biggest needs.
So, Monty, are you done with the QB room at this point? Are you still trying to work out a trade? Maybe try to swap Sam Darnold and bring in a Jimmy Garoppolo? Or I saw Nick Foles was released by the Bears today. Or would you just ride it with Sam and Corral and see how it pans out?
If you can get Foles, you know, to me, in my opinion, you go get him. You know, if there's somebody that you can add to that room, veteran presence, in my opinion, is as much as, you know, as excited I am with Matt Corral, you're not going into the year with Sam Darnold and PJ Walker as, you know, your alternatives for quarterback. You know, that's just all due respect. You're not that, in my opinion, that's, you don't do you don't make all the moves that you made this offseason and say, hey, PJ Walker and Sam Darnold are my alternatives for quarterback. If Matt Corral doesn't work. I just don't believe that. I think that you got to go get a veteran quarterback. If, you know, if not, you know, I don't want to sound like a broken record and I don't want to be that guy. You got Cam Newton in there as well. You know, like I said, if we're just looking for a veteran presence quarterback that can bridge Matt Corral in, you know, so there's a few options there. I'm not 100% done with it, but I'm not fully upset if Scott Fitter says, you know, we got our guys. I want to see what Sam Darnold does, you know, because for all the junk that we can talk about Sam Darnold, I'm one of the loudest persons that don't like Sam Darnold. He started the season off strong, you know, and I do understand the logic that if you improve your offensive line, if you get, you know, if you can kind of make that situation at quarterback not so toxic, and you know, and if you can make things just a little bit more consistent, you probably can get more consistent play out of him. Again, I'm not stamping Sam Darnold, but, you know, I'm not finished with trying to get me a quarterback. Now, to address what Kev just said about the draft picks, I think you just hit it on the head, you know, like, and like you said, I'm glad you said we're not comparing Trey Lance to Matt Corral. But for it, I mean, this is where I stand. I don't give a damn if he was drafted in the seventh round or the first. If you hit on your quarterback, you hit on your quarterback. You know, like so if you hit in the third round, here in 4 years, nobody's gonna care what round he, like, for instance, nobody give a damn what round Dak was drafted. Nobody cares what round Russell was drafted. It's hitting on your quarterback. So when we're talking about value. Yeah, hell yeah. Like, yeah, dude, if I can potentially get me a franchise quarterback in the third versus auctioning rounds one and two up for Trey Lance, or what fans were wanting to do with CJ Stroud and Bryce Young next year, what are we talking about? You know, because the argument is Matt Corral in year two a strong enough quarterback to carry your franchise versus a rookie quarterback in next year and having to auction all those picks up to get him? So, Kev, I think you hit that on the head as well. I mean, it's just it's a different situation a year out, but it's the same situation, you know, if that makes sense as well. But going back to what you said, Will, I'm happy with the QB room. I would still look to add a veteran quarterback. If you can't rock out, you know, see what Sam can give you. And I'm under the impression, you know, if Sam stinks week eight, Matt Corral is your starting quarterback for the rest of the year. So, you know, that's where I kind of stand.
What's up, Jordan? Hope you're doing well. Thank you for tuning in tonight. So, I know I'm going to address some of these other questions we're seeing about is Matt Corral a franchise QB? First, is he a franchise QB? Obviously, it's too early to tell. Like I said earlier, I think he has traits that translate well to the NFL. It's just going to be up to our coaching staff, surrounding talent and scheme to make him as comfortable transition to the NFL as possible. We have a good – I mean, think about when rookie quarterbacks fail. Look at what Sam Darnold went through with the Jets. You know, they go to these terrible situations with, you know, volatile coaching staffs, not a lot of talent around them. And it's pretty much a big reason why they don't fail. But I think what we're doing here, we built the roster. I mean, you have a defense returning a lot of players. I mean, Reddick's a big loss, but they were still saw a lot of growth from the young guys there as well. So they'll come in with a solid defense. You got possibly two good tackles with Ike Ekwonu, Taylor Moten. They address the interior O-line in free agency. Can Christian McCaffrey stay healthy? DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson. So, I mean, Corral's coming into a pretty good situation, if you ask me. So I think we do have the foundation in place to help it make it as easy on him as possible. And you think about our weapons, where do they eat the most? Christian McCaffrey and DJ Moore. DJ Moore, slant routes, you know, getting over the middle, getting the yards after the catch, bubble screens, jet sweeps. Christian McCaffrey, Texas routes out of the backfield. A lot of the work in between the numbers. Where does Matt Corral excel as a passer? In between the numbers. Ball comes out quick into the hands. Playmakers be able to do their thing after the catch. So with that quick release, ball getting to them early, I think we have the right foundation for him to succeed. But as far as making a prediction about will he be the next franchise guy, this and that, still way too early. So we'll just have to see how all of that plays out. So we can talk about quarterbacks all day. And we'll be here till 11 p.m. at night doing that. Let's see if we can get through the rest of these picks in these last few minutes. JD, Brandon Smith, linebacker out of Penn State. First and foremost, you know, he's athletic as hell for a linebacker. I think he's posted almost a perfect 10 relative athletic score. You got to talk about our fans about what you saw from Brandon Smith and how you see him contributing to the team this year.
Dang. Oh, my God, man. I'm not a fan of the film. Here we go again. I'm the bad guy. I was going to say trash, but I'm being
talk
nice.
Talk on it, bro. Speak on it.
I'm being nice. The film was bad, bro. Straight up. But, again, with the relative athletic score we were talking about, the idea here is that you draft him and coach him up, and now you get a good athlete who's malleable and your coaches can develop him. My issue with the thing with the draft from round three on down is that we have and I want to credit Scott Fitterer because it's a solid method of thinking. If I get athletes and my coaches do their job, we're going to hit on these picks. But we are banking on Coach Rhule to do something we haven't seen him do in 3 years. We're banking on him taking raw talent and athletes and developing them. Who has he developed?
Dante Jackson, Shaq Thompson.
Dante Jackson came into the league hooping.
Oh, okay, Shaq Thompson?
Shaq Thompson just needed a number change. I don't know what to do.
Hassan Reddick's year with last year compared to his before he got here. Wasn't he a draft bust?
Hassan was a 14
Arizona. bro, if we're gonna keep
Hassan breakfast, was hooping.
How Jeremy Chin look from year one to year two? Was that another guy that
Marquise Haynes? Your boy Curtis Samuel.
Getting the most out of him.
Curtis Samuel. Yeah.
Well, Shaq got his money before Rhule even got here. Herney gave him that contract in December of that contract extension, December of 2019. So technically, he got the money right before Rhule got here. But he has played significantly better since then. Just to be accurate on the money situation part of it.
Maybe what Shaq needed was a scheme change, and so I'll give him Shaq. I won't give him Reddick because Reddick was
Samuel?
I won't even give him Curtis Samuel because Curtis Samuel was hooping even before that.
He was hopping, man. He was injured the first 2 years.
When he was on the field, he was solid. So I'm not even gonna give him that one.
Where I hear you with they were playing well before they got. You know, we're talking about playing well versus them having a career year under Matt Rhule. You know, let's keep that in mind. You know, Curtis Samuel might not have been bad prior to, but Curtis Samuel had a career year. His first year with Matt, under Matt Rhule, you know. So let's also keep that in mind. Now, I'm not defending Matt. Everybody knows I'm not a Matt Rhule fan, you know. I kind of agree with you. We're banking on Matt Rhule to do something that we've never seen before, and I even agree with you that I'm not a fan of the tape. That being said, I don't agree with that. We haven't seen guys develop and play better under Matt Rhule because we have. You know, if we're going to be realistic, Dante Jackson might have been playing well beforehand. Dante Jackson was very inconsistent beforehand as well.
He wasn't inconsistent this year.
He was a lot less inconsistent this year than he's ever been in any other season.
Oh, I heard inconsistent still.
So yes or no?
Dante Jackson had a bad game against Terry McLaurin. Everybody has a bad game against Terry McLaurin.
Will, if we're going to keep it a brick, we can say he was inconsistent because, he was injured. But if you look at the numbers, bro, he gave up one. He only had one 100-yard receiver on him all year. So and we're talking about guys like Terry McLaurin. Terry McLaurin, he strapped Terry McLaurin up. He strapped your boy from what's my man from Dallas. He strapped my man's up. So like if we go keep
until the end of the game, until the end of the game,
man, Dante Jackson strapped him up, bro.
Like, until the end of the game. Tell the whole story. Until the end of the game. Yes or no?
Bro, the game was over by the third quarter, though.
Oh, okay.
So, Dallas was kicking our teeth in by the third quarter?
Okay. What's missing in all of this is that we're talking about day three picks, right? Day three picks don't develop in 1 year or 2 years. Could be 3 to 4 years before we ever see a return on a day three pick. Look at Marquise Haynes. You know, he finally come into his own after three years. Josh Norman, he showed flashes rookie year, a little bit flashes sophomore year. Not sophomore, I'm talking like a college kid, but his second year in the league, you know, year three and four, that's when he starts to break out. He becomes an all-pro in his fourth year. He's talking about Matt Rhule and developing. I mean, how did he build Baylor and Temple? He's not getting five-star recruits. He's taking athletic guys with athletic traits, and he's developing them so that either junior and senior year, he can have a good football team. That's how he built Temple into beating Penn State in year three and four. That's how he turned Baylor into start competing with Oklahoma and making the Big 12 championship by his third and fourth year. And then look at Baylor this past year. My goodness, that was a great football team. That who they beat in the Sugar Bowl this year. Everybody's giving this new coach credit. Oh, he turned around the program in 1 year. No, he didn't. Those were all Matt Rhule's recruits that he won with this year. We haven't seen this new coach's recruiting class come in and step in. So, and I get the Matt Rhule hate, the Matt Rhule doubt. He hasn't won but five games back-to-back. But developing athletes and the quality football players is something he does. Look at Robbie Anderson coming in unrecruited, undrafted free agent.
Trash this year. Trash this year.
Look at
Trash this year.
Trash that quarterback this year. Nah, bro. Call it 100, man. Name a 1,000-yard wide receiver Sam Donald has ever made off his throws.
Robbie was a defensive back to Temple and became an NFL receiver under, you know, Matt Rhule and Temple's system. So, I mean, he put guys in Temple in the league. Look at all the Temple guys in the NFL right now that played under Matt Rhule. They're all the Matt Ioannidis coming back. I mean, he's got a lot of guys that went through that program. So, I mean, this is how he built them. So, he's just trying to translate that into the NFL. Unfortunately, I don't think we're going to know the results until year three or four. And I know nobody wants to be patient with that, but that's just kind of how his process and his development system works. So, we just have to suck it up, see what he does. But, you know, and there's an article about it too. Evan Cooper said it best. He said, if we're going to miss, we're going to miss fast. So that's what they do. They want to take – they're trying to use this day three – draft day, undrafted free agents. This is where they're going to build the way they did in Baylor and Temple. We're going to just bet on traits and try to use our coaching to develop them. And you look at the staff additions. I mean, Steve Wilks, you know, what's our linebackers coach? I can't believe I'm forgetting his name. The Luke Kuechly's coach. Al Holcomb.
Yep, he's back.
So, I mean, you got all these guys that are used to developing players. So, you know, let's see what he does, man. Yeah, another one, Rocky Sin playing well with the Colts for a couple of years.
And that's what I was going to say, Will. Like, for all the shit we talk about Matt Rhule, bro, he putting him in the league. Like, you know, it's like we all talk about, and that's the thing, we all talk about universities or coaches that are historically known for getting got players in the league. Bro, he putting them in the league. You know, it ain't like that. We were just talking about his running back. I can't remember his name right now. But his running back,
Abram Smith.
Abram, exactly. We were just talking about Abram. Like, he's gonna be a stud if he goes to the right team. So he's putting players in the league. Now, mind you, again, I am kind of with JD. Like, we're banking on Rhule to do something we've never seen him do in the league in the NFL. Like, so that's a fair argument. Going now to what you said as well, Will. He's a proven coach that just over time he will get better. That remains to be seen in the NFL. You know, we can't relate. We can't really take what he did in college and relate it to the NFL because it's a complete different game. But we know that over time, Matt Rhule is proven to make his teams better. He's also proven in the NFL guys that were kind of on the fringe of, we don't, I mean, you know, are they going to be good players? Are they going to be, you know, bust? I don't want to say bust, but, you know, are they not going to pan out? Bro, under Matt Rhule, they're playing good ball. Dante Jackson, for what take it for what you want, Dante Jackson had a career year last year under Matt Rhule. Shaq Thompson had a career year. Curtis Samuel can't even stay healthy other than last year winning under Matt Rhule. You know what I'm saying? So it was like there's a bunch of different things that I feel like we have to, as much as we rag on Matt Rhule, Matt Rhule has done some good. We're, you know, now, again, you take that as you will, you know, because you can make the argument that him stamping Sam Darnold kind of trumps everything that he's done so far. But Matt Rhule hasn't been all bad. He's been a lot bad. It's not all bad.
I think the missing on the quarterback, number one, and his coaching staff, number two, has made our situation look, and I can't believe I'm defending Matt Rhule because I criticize him almost every day, but missing at the quarterback position and missing on not having NFL head coaching experiences on his staff is really what's kind of overshadowed all the good that he's done with the team so far. I mean, look at the improvements on the defense. In his first year, I think we had 8 or 9 rookies playing significant snaps on defense. These guys couldn't get off the field. Well, Kev, how long did it take for us to force a punt, like 3 games?
Yeah, we went through a 3.5 game stretch where we didn't even force any punts in 2020. Matter of fact, historically, the 2020 Panthers had the second worst third down defense in NFL history. That's how tragic it was. But I don't think the total year, I don't think we forced no more than 30 punts all year. That's crazy.
So look at the strides the defense made from that unit that couldn't even force a punt to the end of the season. They started to play better. And then, I mean, in this season, I mean, we ranked number 2 in yards. I don't think they were the second best defense in the league, but they're definitely a top half unit. So just those type of improvements, I think, is kind of getting overlooked because he missed so hard on the quarterback position. His building of the O-line was atrocious up until this year. And he didn't really have a lot of good veteran experience in his coaching staff. So I think he's fixed the coaching staff. I mean, I think McAdoo was a terrible head coach, but a pretty decent offensive coordinator and QB developer. Aaron Rodgers and Eli Manning think highly of him. So, I mean, those are pretty good referral sources there. So,
I think if he just leave the offensive line strictly to Campen, because, you know, him switching Moten to left tackle and putting Brady at right, like stuff like that, that's what really, you know what I'm saying, made me itch, you know, with him. It's almost like, hey, I got to force the guys that I chose here to win, you know, keep starting Cam Irvin and Pat Elflein when clearly it was clear to see we had better players that wasn't getting a rep. So I'm just hoping that with the offseason evaluation and things take place that, you know, with the offensive line coach now whose resume, I just kind of hope Matt Rhule just kind of steps out the way and let Campen dictate the rotation or the depth of it. I get he's the head coach, yada, 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 but he's shown his ineptness to properly evaluate offensive line talent, even though his job prior to us in the NFL was an offensive line assistant coach with the Giants in 2012, but clearly, that part also rubs me the wrong way about Matt Rhule.
Okay, we could do a whole show on Matt Rhule. Let's try to get through these draft picks. We're approaching an hour right now. JD Amari Barno, 6'6" edge rusher from Virginia Tech, runs a 4.36. Another raw guy, you know, probably in that Mario Addison, Marquise Haynes role as a prospect coming in. What can you tell us about Barno?
He looks a lot like Marquise's Ole Miss film at Virginia Tech. I think Amari landed on the best team possible. I think he's a good athlete. He's a fluid guy. He is a little bit of a tweener to me, too. Like, he could be an edge like Brian Burns, but he flashes some range. And you might want to see, or in some cases, like a Frankie Louvu, stand him up in just some scenarios and let him chase ball. But I think getting with Brian Burns and getting with Marquise Haynes and guys that can show him how to beat blocks if they get their hands on him, and how to beat blocks without even using the hand. So like teaching him a leap, showing him how to get to his landmark and dip the corner and turn will be huge for him. He's 4.3 speed. So this was one of the picks. He's real raw, but at this point, an elite athlete like that at edge, hey, take the shot and see if you can coach him up.
Okay, let's keep moving along. Kev, Cade May is a guy you were high on last year. Can you tell us our fans about him?
Yeah, with Cade Mays, you're talking about someone that's played his first 2 years at the University of Georgia. And then there was an issue where his dad ended up suing to University of Georgia over something. And Cade transferred to a University of Tennessee to finish out his last 2 years. One of the things that sticks out about him is effectiveness to play all five positions on the offensive line. I know a lot of them think that he's just a guard, but he's one of the guys that you definitely want to have active on your roster come game day, because knowing that you can only probably have maybe two offensive linemen at time, depending on how your 46 man at the roster is, he's just someone that offers that ultimate flexibility. But as far as his individual talents, what I like about him, again, with the style of running that we're going to be doing, the power gap running schemes, this guy definitely fits the bill. He plays aggressive. He plays hard. He can be violent with his run blocking as well. He's actually improved from his 2021 film that I watched when I thought he was going to enter the draft last year to 2022. As has been reported, he only gave up one sack all of last year, and I think only about five or six pressures. Playing in the SEC against the talents that they played against, you know, like Georgia and Alabama, you know, for you to have those type of numbers at your position, that was definitely, I don't want to say a steal, but I think that's just great value there. Now, I think a majority of us in the chat was hollering for Jamari Sawyer, who ended up going out to the Chargers. Side note, I'm loving how they're building a wall for Justin Herbert out there with their offensive line picks. I mean, they're just really they're really protecting him up front with the way they've been drafting their offensive line the last 2 years. But anyway, back to Mays. He's a guy that by year two or three, there's a good chance he could be challenging. You know, depending on what we do with Bozeman, who's on a 1 year deal at center, he's someone that could also have a shot to play center. He's very intelligent. He's real good at blitz recognition, which is something that, you know, we've discussed at length, you know, here, tired of seeing those tackle in stunt games that's just blown up the A gaps over and over. This is something that he excels at as well. So I just think that Cade Mays is a player that is going to start off being a depth player, but if he continues to perfect his craft, continue to work on his footwork, his hand placement, being consistent, getting good bend and leverage, he's someone that potentially could be a starter for us down the road.
Okay, good information. And Monty, I'll leave you with our seventh round pick, Kalen Barnes, a Baylor cornerback, ran a 4.23 40-yard dash at the combine, the second fastest time of all time, next to John Ross. What can you tell us about Kalen Barnes?
Yeah, Barnes is, I think you hit it on the head. You know, he's a flyer, and I think we all spoke on it earlier that, you know, if we're going to take guys late in the draft, you're going to take guys with high, you know, with the traits that you feel like you can develop. No, you know, I feel like there are a lot of things you can teach. Speed is just one of them that you can't, you know, running a 4.2. Anything is ridiculous, man. So I think that's, you know, that speaks volumes in itself. I definitely think he's going to be a developmental guy, you know, a special teams guy that you definitely want. And I feel like that's what going into that last day, especially late, that 76th, 7th round, those are guys that you're looking for, guys that can come in and potentially develop and have an impact on your special teams. Again, those are the kind of guys that you're looking for and that you want to have on your team, you know, athletes, you know, freak athletes that fly around to the ball. You know, looking at what he did at Baylor, you know, it looks like that. You know, he's raw. He's a raw prospect. He's a freak athlete. Can get, you know, so it looks like he doesn't have a problem getting to the ball. But again, these are guys that I'm not really banking on having much play time, you know, on the field. You know, these are guys that you're looking to, you know, to fill out your roster, add to special teams. And I feel like for that purpose, and, you know, I feel like he'd be a great addition.
All right. Well, there you have it. We covered all of Panthers' 2022 draft class. Just to recap, we got Ike Ekwonu, tackle out of NC State. Matt Corral, quarterback out of Ole Miss. Brandon Smith, linebacker out of Penn State. Amari Barno, edge rusher out of Virginia Tech. Cade Mays, interior offensive lineman out of Tennessee. And then Kalen Barnes, of course, the Baylor guy. You know, Matt Rule can't get through a draft without getting one of his own. Cornerback out of Baylor. So we'll see them. And Kev, you have the dates. Mini camp starts when? When we first get to see our rookies in action running around a bit? You're on mute.
Sorry about that. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it's June 16th through the 18th, the three-day mandatory mini camp schedule for the Panthers. So I believe if, like it was before, I think it's going to be closed to the public. So we just have to rely on the reporters and their information.
Okay. Well, there you go. Something to look forward to this offseason. So be sure tomorrow at noon, tune in. We got to have special guest, former Pro Bowl and All-Pro guard Mike Wall. He's going to join us to talk about our offensive line picks in particular, Ike Ekwonu and Cade Mays. So that should be fun talking to him for about, you know, 30 minutes or so to see his thoughts on our picks. Before we sign off, any closing remarks from you, Monty, or JD?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll speak. I guess last thing I got to say, I'm very pleased with what we did this weekend. Moving forward, I think that we, you know, we put ourselves in a good position to, you know, to be very competitive in 2022. It's all about just going to go get it, fellas. You know, we speak on a day-to-day basis, you know, and I feel like we all know the potential of this team. You know, it's just all about going to go get it. I think adding another safety and adding a tight end, you know, wouldn't hurt as well. But yeah, man, I'm pleased. I'm excited. I love to want to see what Akeem and what Matt Corral can do. So yeah, I'm all in, brother.
All right, JD, you have anything you want to add before we sign off for the night?
Nah. I'd give this class a solid B. Just because they didn't trade for a vet quarterback. I don't hate it all. I swear I don't. It's just that I'm taking the good with the bad a little bit more. But yeah, solid draft. Good job for Federer, and hopefully Rue can get his staff to coach these guys up.
Yep. And one more thing before we close out, it's actually June 14th through the 16th. So that's a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday for the three-day mandatory mini camp. And also, Panther fans, be on the lookout for May 12th. That's when the schedule drop is going to happen. That's going to be on a Thursday. So that's a week from this coming Thursday on the 12th is when the schedule drop lets us know who we playing and everything like that. So definitely be on the lookout for that.
And as they're reminding us in the comments, they also do have a rookie mini camp for just the rookies, and I think some tryout players and undrafted free agents, but that won't be competing against the guys on the roster until I think mini camp later on this summer. So everybody, thank you for tuning in tonight. Be sure to catch our talk tomorrow with Pro Bowl guard Mike Wall. He always has good insight on offensive linemen. So we're looking forward to that. We'll probably be on more regular now as we approach the bulk of the offseason to talk about, you know, how guys are progressing, what's going on with mini camp, training camp, rookie camp, and all of those things. So signing off for the night, keep pounding. Talk to you soon.